Hello and welcome to Horror Cult Trash Over, the show that discusses all the masterpieces and trash to pieces of genre cinema. My name's Chris.
And I am Joan Crawford. I forbid you slagging me off for the next hour and a half. And I'm Gary, and it's a good job we're not going to do that anyway.
We're not.
We love Joan. The spirit of Joan, everyone. She was only here for a few seconds.
It was a perfect impression.
It was actually Faye Dunaway.
I'm pretty sure everyone's impression of Joan Crawford now is Faye Dunaway.
Spot on for this film, though. She actually looks like her in this film, but we'll get to that.
Yes. Welcome to week two of Hagsploitation Month here on the Horror Cult Trash of a Podcast.
Yes.
We've got another absolute corker for you this week. But first of all, let's discuss what's new with Chris and Gary.
Yes. This might be the first time where I've got two bests and you have a best and a worst.
Yeah. There's been a lot of rewatches for you this week, hasn't there?
For my first time watches, my best of is The Magic Flute. What can I say? Apparently, I'm an opera gay.
Oh.
Who knew?
Are there opera gays?
If there are, I might be the first of our kind. Ingmar Bergman. Just can't do no wrong. I mean, every film I've watched of his has been 5 stars, and this is no exception. It's just blurs the line between stage production and film. It's just so cinematic and crazy to think this is all on a stage.
It has
that signature Bergman look about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's Mozart's work, essentially, but it's, you can't mistake it for being a Bergman film.
No. I completely agree. That was my best of the week as well. I thought it was absolutely beautiful. Exceptional filmmaking and exceptional performances as well. Yeah. I'm not an expert at opera. I'm not. So my reference points aren't plentiful or anything like that. But I thought they sounded fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not able to judge. But to me, in my ears, it sounded great. So I'm all for it.
Yeah. I mean, my second best is Twin Warriors, a.k.a. Tai Chi Master.
Yes.
It's Jet Li and Michelle Yeoh just doing their thing and creating a very entertaining film in the process. It's just sort of screwball comedy that Asian cinema does the best, mixed with some fantastic action scenes and stunning choreography, stunning cinematography. It's, yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, really, really enjoyed that. Any other week, obviously, if we hadn't watched a Bergman classic, it would have been top choice because I thought it was really, really enjoyable. It's the kind of entertainment that I appreciate. Action-packed, doesn't waste a second. Was it always the most hilarious film? No, so, you know, some jokes don't age too well, but I thought it was great. Had a very, very fun time with it. Okay. My worst of the week would be, drum roll please, from Gary. you're well aware, it's Beneath the Planet of the Apes.
7-year-old me is disgusted.
We have made our way mostly through, we're not quite there yet, the Planet of the Apes films,
mm-hmm.
which Gary has a long history with.
I do.
And I have no history with, apart from the very first film, the Tim Burton remake, but we didn't watch that. I'd seen the very first film, 5 stars, wonderful, all-time classic, brilliant, everything that everyone's ever said it is. The sequels, hit and miss.
Uh-huh.
This was a fucking miss. I've never known a franchise to jump the shark from the get-go. I had no idea what was going on. I had no idea while Charlton Heston seemingly just didn't have enough time in his schedule. Like had a day. So he was like, I'll give you a day. So just make up some shit around the fact that I can't be in the film.
Whilst casting an actor that looked exactly like him.
Who followed it? Let's not get too much into it. I was very confused. It felt really dark in places and very violent.
So is the whole franchise, though. I mean, I didn't realize that as a kid, but a lot of the themes went over my head.
But this had weird aliens.
Hey, they're mutants, not aliens.
Mutants, or whatever they were, who looked kind of campy, and then worshipped an atomic bomb. And it's like, that's very dark for what is essentially some Star Trek one episode villains of some sort. And then, yeah, really quite violent as well. And it's just, I did not appreciate it whatsoever. I will give shout outs to Escape from the Planet of the Apes, though, and Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. Clearly, to be a good Planet of the Apes film, you have to have Malcolm McDowell.
Roddy McDowell.
Fuck me. You used to mock me all the time for making that mistake, and now the tables have turned.
Bitch.
All the time. Why Malcolm McDowell?
Because he looks like he should be in Planet of the Apes.
But why not Andy
McDowell?
No offense,
Malcolm McDowell.
I am a homosexual. Yeah, I should be saying Andy McDowell.
But Malcolm McDowell has the face for Planet of the Apes. It's a miracle that he hasn't been cast.
But excuse me, because I love Malcolm McDowell as well. And he was, by all accounts, on our team. So I should show some appreciation.
Yeah, you do love Roddy McDowell
as well. Oh, I'm done.
You fucking did it again.
I keep doing it. I have no idea why.
Because there's Malcolm McDowell on our team. He wasn't Gossip Girl.
No, he wasn't, was he?
He was the last word said in Reboot of Gossip Girl.
Oh, he wasn't gay in the...
No, but he was in it.
Oh, I see.
But yeah, Roddy McDowell's great. Kim Hunter is fantastic.
Fabulous.
Yeah, Escape is my favourite of the original franchise.
Mm-hmm.
But the new ones blow them out of the water. Which, I as a kid, I never thought I'd ever say that about anything about Planet of the Apes that wasn't the original films, but... it's amazing what you can do with a budget and modern technology.
Yeah, I watched Rise of the Planet of the Apes for the first time and really appreciated it. It was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and apparently it gets better. So it does. I'm quite excited for that.
Speaking of rising the planets, no, I've got nothing.
Okay.
Yeah. Speaking of,
I've got nothing. Speaking of
rise of a powerful being.
Speaking of playing it straight and Gossip Girl, this straight jacket.
Yes, it is.
Yes, this week's Hagsploitation classic straight jacket. We will be discussing it in full. Spoiler warning: if you have not seen the film, there is a delicious twist.
Yes.
A delightful twist. A camp twist. If you have not seen the film, if you do not know the twist, then do not listen.
Yeah.
Go and watch the film. It might be on YouTube. Or it might not be.
It's not.
Oh, is it not?
No. You can get it on Indicator, though. Indicator Blu-ray.
Yes. Yes.
And, yeah, I mean, as Joan will tell you herself in the trailer that we'll play a little later... Watch it from the start. Do not, the whole psycho spiel. But yes, straight jacket.
I think Joan Crawford was just like that anyway. Do not be late for my film.
Straight jacket from 1964, one of William Castle's best.
Absolutely. I would say, depending on the day, William Castle's actual best.
Yeah, it's from...
It's one close.
From one of my favourite subgenres, which is bad girls thriving with axes.
Yeah. I won't ask you to name any of us because I'll spoil it for later.
Pearl.
Any of us?
So, Pearl. There is also, obviously, Axe, which we haven't seen, but I'm sure it'll be a favourite. Cherry Falls.
This might be a little spoiler for Urban Legend, but Urban Legend, the first kills with an axe.
Urban Legend. Do you know what? To be honest, I can't name that many. But still, it's I'm sure it's a great genre. Oh, Lisa Frankenstein.
Oh, she's got an axe in
She's got an axe in nice. That.
Yeah, no, I've fucked up on this. I thought of two films basically, and now I can't name any more. But don't judge me. It was actually leading to a point I was going to make anyway.
Go on then.
And that is the fact that this film, quite conveniently, with what we're discussing next week, we're going to be discussing X. This film definitely played a part in influencing Pearl, and there are so many similarities in there. There's even a poster that someone designed, modeled after the straitjacket poster, and just like even the way that Mia Goth carries the axe in the film and everything. There's so many parallels, and we love to see it. We do love to see bad girls with axes thriving.
Oh, two of them.
Yeah. This is directed by William Castle. You did House on Haunted Hill, 13 Ghosts, Homicidal, I Saw What You Did, Tingler, 13 Frightened Girls, Sardonicus, and more. Of course, we did a full episode on William Castle. Go back and listen to it. He said in his biography that Joan Crawford was not difficult at all to work with, only a real perfectionist, and it was the best experience of his life. However, he could not resist using the sort of gimmick for this film that he always did for his other films, and at cinemas, he gave out cardboard axes streaked with simulated blood.
Yes.
And of course, iconically, she also, Joan Crawford, as portrayed by Jessica Lange in Feud, would go out to cinemas to promote the film, and because she had a financial interest, she would go on a several city tour, making personal appearances, running through the cinema with the axe.
Yes, yes. It was reported she received, was it 15 to 20% of the film's profits as part of her contract?
Yes, she did.
So she had a very much a vested interest in the film doing well. And William Castle, as I've said many times on the podcast, was a marketing genius.
He was.
And it worked. And we'll get to that part in a minute. But, yeah, Joan Crawford took herself very seriously, but took her work very seriously. Even someone like Bette Davis, who didn't like Joan Crawford, would always say that she was a professional and she was a perfectionist.
Mm-hmm.
And again, so I don't want to get too much into because we haven't got enough time. But if Joan Crawford was a man, if it was Gregory Peck out there who was a perfectionist and wanted everything done, you know, as he saw it, there wouldn't be an issue. No one would be, you know, being bitchy about Gregory Peck, the perfectionist.
Joan
Crawford would have a reputation as a woman who liked things done a particular way.
Yeah, let's face it. That probably was the case, but we don't know about it because he's a man.
Yes, so, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it does reek of misogyny.
But seemingly, William Castle is someone who actually appreciated that. Oh, you're the star of the film. You're on time.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant. Oh, you have a good idea, Joan. Okay, let's have a look. Oh, yeah, that's a great idea. Thanks for thinking of that, Joan.
Mm-hmm. This was written by Robert Bloch, who did the Psycho novel, Star Trek, the Hunger TV series, Monsters, Tales from the Dark Side, Three Dangerous Ladies, The Dead Don't Die, not that one, The Cat Creature, and more. This heavy marketing part of this film was from the director of Homicidal, from the writer of Psycho, and the co-star of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
Yes. Yeah, so William Castle was a huge fan of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
Yeah.
But originally Joan Blondell was meant to star.
She was.
But it must have been a terrific coup for William Castle to get Joan Crawford.
Yeah.
Because this film is probably quite influenced by what ever happened to Baby Jane anyway in terms of hagsploitation.
It was an accident at home that caused Joan Blondell to not star in the film.
And Joan Blondell would be fantastic in this as well, an accomplished actress in her own right. Robert Bloch, I feel like Psycho is revered, at least now, after all these years, as a film.
Yeah.
And I think Alfred Hitchcock helped.
Yes.
I haven't read the novel, but it's not like Psycho the novel is sort of within the 100 novels you must read. Yet Psycho the film is constantly in the 100 films you need to see before you die list. So, William Castle, I feel, was also a huge fan of Psycho.
Mm-hmm.
And really wanted to recreate what Psycho did, yes. particularly in Homicidal. So, great team put together.
Yeah. And it worked because, I mean, it was made on a budget of $550,000 and it made $2.1 million worldwide.
Uh-huh.
And it was released in the UK in the lower half of a double bill with a Michael Winner film, The System.
Okay.
Loved that we used to just have double bills for cinema releases.
I really... I mean, I suppose now we pay a fixed sum every month.
Yeah.
So we can have double bills whenever we
That's
like.
True. That's
triple true. Bills, quadruple bills. But it would have been nice to go and have mm-hmm. two films put together that they thought would make a good duo. And I, as somebody who doesn't drive and lives in the UK, I still have it quite high on my bucket list to go to a drive-in theatre.
Mm-hmm.
I love that, as we all know, that Americana, that sort of aesthetic. That thing, I love it. Love it, love it, love it.
Thank you, Camila Cabello. So, as shocking as it is, Straitjacket is listed amongst the 100 most enjoyably bad movies ever made in the official Razzie movie guide. Razzies, really, every time I mention them on this podcast, it proves more and more that they're so full of shit.
Do you know what the Razzies don't understand?
Camp.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is in no way a bad film at all.
No.
Like, not even on a technical standpoint. There's only one bad performance in this film, and that adds to the enjoyment of the film when you find out why he's there.
Yeah.
It could have been bad, though, because the original version of the script with Joan Blondell involved a murderer who disguised herself by committing crimes whilst wearing an inflatable fat suit.
Oh, no.
And then, it was replaced before Joan replaced
Joan. Oh, of course, because I feel like Joan Blondell was larger.
Yeah.
A larger woman at the time.
Should we talk about who's in it?
Yes, in a section we like to call, Hey, I Know You.
Not Joan Blondell.
Not Joan Blondell.
But no. Joan Crawford, of course, as Lucy Harbin, the star of... If you don't know by now, then what are you doing? But the star
I feel like
of...
this is like the fifth time we've gone through Joan Crawford's filmography.
You could do it for a change.
Oh, shall I? So, Joan Crawford, star of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, Johnny Guitar, Oscar winner for Mildred Pierce, Grand Hotel, The Unknown, The Women... Sudden Fear, Possessed, Humoresque, so much more. I Saw What You Did, Berserk, which is a fabulous film, which we probably should cover in the future. And just so many wonderful classic Hollywood films.
Including Trog.
A Trog, of course. Trog, previous podcast episode.
When Christina Crawford's memoir, Mummy Dearest, caused an uproar about Joan Crawford's lack of parenting skills, sarcastic T-shirts were manufactured featuring the image of Crawford wielding an axe from this film above the words, Joan Crawford Daycare Centre. If they're still being made, I will have one. as well as the Joan mask. I'd like the Joan mask from this film.
I would love the Joan mask from this film.
Absolutely horrifying. Like, the scariest thing in this film is that mask. It's so camp.
So good. Like, I would actually read it. I'm assuming they made a few of them for these appearances.
Yeah, I hope so.
If Feud is to go by, and Feud, I think, is, you know, full of hearsay and such, but a great watch if no one's seen it. But there is a scene where John Waters is playing William Castle and, you know, Joan's making her appearance and such. And there are other sort of extras, aren't there?
There
with
is.
Joan Crawford masks on. So I'm assuming quite a few were made.
I mean, looking now online, it looks like you get the cardboard ones.
Okay.
But, and the eye mask that you own.
Yes.
But not the the straitjacket one.
Oh, no.
This exists, though, if you'd like to try and describe this to our listeners.
So that's a vintage original Joan Crawford Halloween mask. The eyebrows are quite accurate. Very heavy on the eyeshadow. I don't think Joan's lips were that big. No. It's giving, I don't know, actually. It's hard to describe. I don't think her skin was green. No. Like that.
It's kind of given Who Framed Roger Rabbit, if Joan Crawford's starred.
Who was the bad, the villain in Rocky and Bullwinkle?
It's like someone's done it for Drag Race and they're going to get sent home that week.
I would still own that. I would absolutely put that on my wall.
Co-starring alongside Joan, we're trying to, but she's not out staging them. Diane Baker as Carol Cutler. She was in Marnie, Silence of the Lambs.
Yes.
Loved her suit in that.
Loved her suit
in The Prize. Journey to the Center of the Earth. The Cable Guy. The Nanny. Not that one. Murder at 1600. The Net. Murder, She Wrote. And more.
Yes.
So a bit of a legend, Diane Baker.
Very much. In her own right. Very much. She tries her best.
She does.
She does. And she does a good job.
She's fighting a constant battle.
But she gets ate up at every moment.
Yeah.
Thank God. So, I mean, someone has to be sacrificed to the Joan Crawford.
It sounds like she had an absolute blast with the Joan Crawford experience. From the cold set to her purposely upstaging her. There's a very short documentary. The making of Straitjacket is really worth watching, just for these stories alone. Leif Erikson plays Bill Cutler. He was in The High Chaparral, On the Waterfront, Showboat, The Carpetbaggers, Invaders from Mars, previous podcast film, I Saw What You Did, previous podcast film, Twilight's Last Gleaming, Abduction, and more.
I only really remember him in Invaders from Mars. Don't remember him as to what he did, but yeah.
No,
but he's all right.
Loved starring Joan, clearly.
Good for him.
And Howard St. John plays Raymond Fields. He was in Born Yesterday, Lil Abner, Strangers on the Train, The Men, Sex and the Single Girl, Quick Before It Melts, Fate is the Hunter, Lover Come Back, and more.
Yeah. He was also in Goodbye My Fancy, which I think is a little known Joan Crawford film. So I'm getting
she
the feeling that she had an opinion on who would be cast and potentially having previously worked with them, and I assume getting on well with them, they got the job.
Yeah.
Did you get George Kennedy?
I didn't get George Kennedy.
So George Kennedy as Leo Krauss, and I don't know how early this is in his filmography. It's a fairly small role, and he would go on to win the Oscar for Cool Hand Luke, I believe, just a few years later. But he was in the Naked Gun series of films, Charade, Small Soldiers, Death on the Nile, Creepshow 2, Just Before Dawn, and Hush Hush Sweet Charlotte, amongst others. So, yeah, he quite... a small role for George Kennedy, who went on to quite big things. Yes. I think that's it, really, for interesting people. No, not to say the others aren't interesting. But...
Well, in that case, let's talk about our feature presentation.
This is Joan Crawford. I urge you to see my new motion picture Straitjacket from the beginning. Don't reveal the surprise shock ending. Don't reveal the surprise shock.
Yes, so Lucy Harbin, Joan Crawford, has a solution for adultery, an axe.
Yes.
So when she finds her husband in bed with his lover, it's off with their heads. And we open with a scream and a spinning newspaper. And apparently it's called spinning newspaper. I've Googled it many times. I felt like there might have been a fancy name for it.
Spinning
but
newspaper.
We all know the spinning newspaper flying at the screen. And it declares Lucy Harbin is a murderer.
Extra, extra. Read all about it. Love Slayer insane.
We get a flashback with narration to the fateful night that Lucy became a murderer. Unfortunately, Lucy's 3-year-old daughter, Carol, witnesses the deed. And she's the one that's given us the narration much later on. Not as a 3-year-old, but much later on. So Lucy returns home early and sees them in bed through the window. And that's kids camp.
It's camp because like, the woman can't move an inch without jangling her fucking bangles. An extra credit in the film, Joan's bangles, also star of Jacqueline Wilson's wrists, author of Tracy Beaker. Oh my God, they are jangling constantly in this film. It's amazing that you can hear anything else.
It's true. And it's true.
The
it's...
voiceover we get from... Is this actually Joan Crawford doing the voiceover?
No. This is Diane Baker.
It's Diane Baker.
This is Diane Baker.
She's like Lucy Harbin, born and raised on the farm. Parents, poor. Education, meager. Very much a woman and very much aware of the fact.
Yes.
So... fucking camp.
And as a woman, she is jangling all the way.
She is.
Coco Chanel famously said, before you leave the house, take one thing off. Lucy decided to put one extra bangle on before she left the house.
She did. It's an iconic entrance, the way she steps off the train with that classic Joan Crawford lighting on her face.
Yes, she looks drop-dead gorgeous. The dress is to die for. It's a floral dress,
yeah,
isn't it? The hair, I like the hair. It's of its time.
She looks like Faye Dunaway in Mummy Dearest. Like,
she does.
They got it spot on. She must have only looked at her from this film because that's what she looks like and that's what she talks like in that film.
But the hair is kind of coiffed at the front.
Yeah.
It's almost like a fancy version of a mullet.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of coiffed at the front and then long and coiffed at the back. But it's iconic. It's iconic. It's so iconic, it stays in fashion for 20 years.
It does.
As we'll find out.
And, I mean, fancy woman's got to have a fancy man. And her cheating lover is none other than the original Fall guy himself, Lee Majors. In his feature film debut.
Yes.
He got the part when his good friend Rock Hudson. Good friend Rock Hudson. Asked William Castle to please find a job for this 23-year-old twink actor. And he adopted his stage name when he found out. Because Lee Majors isn't his real name. He got the name because Joan Crawford couldn't pronounce his real name. Harvey Lee Yeary.
Oh.
So he's Lee Majors because of Joan Crawford.
Of course, Joan Crawford could change my name whenever. Lee Majors, I remember he was married to Farrah Fawcett.
Yeah.
She was Farrah Fawcett Majors for a long time.
Farrah Fawcett, definitely friend of the gays.
Maybe.
Likes to hide one.
I would assume so. But...
good beard. but he's also obviously in Scrooged, $6 Million Man, and so many more things. Went on to be a big star. And got his start here.
Yeah, yeah. Quite an iconic scene. This, just to preempt, I don't know if this was R-rated at the time. I'm assuming it was.
I don't think it was.
Here in the UK, well, it's a 12.
It's a 12.
But a lot of the film focuses on decapitations.
The poster says, this film vividly depicts axe murders.
Yeah. And this one, or first of the film, the heads are cut off in silhouette against the wall. Before cutting to Lucy on a in a straitjacket, screaming and protesting her innocence.
It actually wasn't written in the US.
Oh, okay. But yeah, here now it's a 12.
Yeah.
Because obviously, as time goes by, things age, and what was shocking back then isn't so shocking now.
I mean, one scene is.
Yeah, but. The effects are a little hokey, should we say, which I believe adds to the charm.
And, yes, it does.
You know, but yeah, it's high camp. Wearing that dress,
yeah,
looking the way she is, lifting that axe into the air. It's cinematic perfection. It really is. This is why I watch films. I need this. This is lifeblood to me when I watch a film. Camp. Over the top, over exaggerated, you know, every part of it, the dress, the bangles, the hair, the eyebrows. I love it. Yeah. I love it. It's what I live for.
We don't have enough fake heads being chopped off these days.
Exactly. And in silhouette as well, you know, come on. Lucy is tried and judged criminally insane. She spends the next 20 years at a mental institution. That's how long it takes for her to regain emotional stability. Upon her release, Lucy moves in with her brother and his wife on their farm. There, she is reunited with her daughter Carol, now an artist and sculptor. She also is going steady with Michael, the richest young man in town. Can I just say, we don't use the term going steady enough anymore.
No.
I quite like the idea as,
I'm going steady.
Going steady, you know? Like, it's a way of saying, you know, we're meant for each other. It's one, you know, hop, skip and a jump to marriage. Going steady, isn't it?
I tell everyone we're going steady.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We're engaged, so...
Very steady.
Very steady. Very steady.
It's so steady that there's no chance of falling over.
Great. Fantastic. Glad you write songs better than you write jokes. What would you even describe that as?
Nothing. Let's forget it happened.
Fab.
She's horrified about the chickens being caged and the pigs not living in a tidy environment.
Yeah.
Animal rights activist, Joan Crawford, everyone.
Carol shows Lucy around the farm and keeps putting her foot in it when referring to the inevitable slaughter of the chickens and pigs. And even when staring at chickens, Joan Crawford puts on a full performance.
She does.
I just hate to see anything caged.
Again, a farm, an axe, pigs, Pearl, anyone?
Yes, of course.
My favourite scene coming up next, where Carol shows Lucy a sculpture she made of her.
Yes.
And she has a little cry over it. It's actually a real sculpture of Joan Crawford, created by Yuka Salamunic, a Yugoslav artist, and it was originally presented to Crawford in 1941 on the set of A Woman's Face. Mm. I need to see A Woman's Face if this is what the woman's face looks like in the film. It's cunty.
It is. I mean, that's what Joan Crawford looked like.
It looks like her in The Unknown, yeah. But it's so camp. It feels like she wrote this herself. How she's unveiling the statue of pure beauty, and Joan's like, oh my gosh. I love it.
I love it. And I think it's a very interesting scene because it plays into sort of quintessential hagsploitation tropes, where the older woman is forced to see the younger version of herself.
Yes.
And she's pleased because she looks beautiful. But obviously it's a reminder of the fact that she doesn't look so beautiful anymore. Mm-hmm. In the eyes of the film. Absolutely gorgeous. But, you know, in the eyes of society, she's aged, which is the most awful thing she could ever do. Can we talk about the elephant in the room?
The fact that Carol kept the Jacqueline Wilson bracelets.
Yes. Yeah, it is that. But it's also the fact that, obviously, Joan Crawford was of a certain age.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, because I don't think she was ever fully honest about her age.
No.
But she would have been, I believe, in her 60s mm-hmm. at the time. She was obviously playing, in the first scene, a woman with a 3-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
So I feel like we were meant to believe she was in her 20s,
yes,
at that point, or 30s, mm-hmm. and then she was meant to be in her 40s in these scenes. It's not defined as such, but it does feel a little like, yes, she's maybe playing younger than she actually was, mm-hmm. because when you look at this burst, that's obviously Joan Crawford when she was a lot younger.
Yeah.
And if that's how her daughter remembered her, that's how she kind of was meant to look in the original scene. But, you know, get your screen time, Joan. Get that screen time. Lucy is reluctant to meet Michael, as everyone is a stranger to her now. And in quite... There are moments of actually true sort of emotion and, mm-hmm. and pathos, you know? Where she is sort of, well, everyone's a stranger to me now. You know, Carol's saying, well, Michael isn't. we're going steady. Yeah. Said, well, I don't know. I don't know him. I've been away for 20 years. I only know the asylum. That's all I know. She runs off before dinner, and Carol and Michael find a photo album with Lucy's dead husband's face cut out of all the photos. Carol acts like it's a gift to Lucy, this photo.
Yeah.
Why would she give a photo album full of pictures?
Because...
Here's some photos. But why wouldn't Michael be like... Because they're like, oh no, all the heads are cut off. Why wouldn't Michael be like, well, that's a pretty inappropriate gift. You know, here's a photo album full of photos of the person you murdered. And you've literally been back less than 24 hours. Here you go. Here's a reminder of that murder you did. Carol attempts to create a bond with her mother, but Lucy is troubled by dreams and flashbacks of her horrific act. She takes Lucy on a shopping spree that includes a dress and jewellery reminiscent of the outfit she wore when she murdered her husband. Again, Lucy loves her bangles.
She does.
She went shopping... So Carol kept the bangles.
Yeah.
And then they went shopping for even more fucking bangles.
I love the ones that literally have bows hanging off them. Yes. Like, from this moment onward, she is unstoppable. You will not forget that she is on screen because you cannot miss her.
So Lucy's returned and she's got grey hair and she's wearing a rather dowdy outfit.
Yes.
It's like, oh, it's what's the collar called?
Turtleneck
collar and all that jazz. She's like, oh, well, don't you have to make a appointment to go to the hairdressers? And Carol's like, no, not quite. We're going somewhere else. And they go to the wig shop. And her hairstyle has been in fashion for so long that it's not just still available at the wig shop. It's in the fucking front window.
This is like the Michael Myers effect. Because it's like in Halloween when... You see the films where they start selling the Michael Myers masks in the shops and stuff. Here, someone is clearly able to buy a Joan Crawford mask.
Yeah.
Because there's one being worn throughout the film.
When she made it. Because she's a sculptress.
I suppose that makes more sense.
Yeah.
But also, you could buy her wig. You could dress up as if a Halloween.
You can buy that exact wig. But yeah, I mean, it kept in style for 20 years. Props to you, you know? The trip to the wig shop does end rather abruptly, though, when Lucy believes that two jump roping girls are coming for her outside.
Yes.
She says, are you deliberately trying to embarrass me in front of a reporter? She doesn't. Of course she doesn't. That night, Lucy hears the rhyme again and envisions lying in bed with the severed heads of her two victims.
Iconic.
So it's based on, what was her name?
Lucy,
oh, the one that Christina Ricci played in a film. Anyway,
Lucy Bordeaux, was it?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, but it's Lucy Harbin took an axe, gave her husband 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave his girlfriend 41.
Lizzie Borden.
There we go. I should have known that. But anyway, yeah. So that's the rhyme. That she thinks the two girls are sinking outside.
She does.
Not it's one, very... two, Freddy's coming for you.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, the way that Carol says, mother, and with the jump rope girls, it's kind of like, ooh, did Wes Craven watch this as well?
Potentially. I feel like when we talk about a lot of the horror films that came out in the 70s and 80s, we talk about in terms of influences, maybe more high profile horror films, and the Vietnam War, you know, but maybe they were going out and seeing William Castle.
But, yeah.
I mean, this made $2 million.
Uh-huh.
Why wouldn't those directors, you know, Spielberg, Craven, Toby Hooper, George Romero, why wouldn't they have been out there watching William Castle films and being influenced by that as well?
Mm-hmm.
And putting it together with their sort of own ideas.
Yeah.
Definitely. So she sees these heads in bed.
Yeah, they are given the Great Yarmouth Louis Two Swords waxworks, but it's iconic.
They've seen better days, or they just haven't had a good day.
Just the idea of Joan Crawford in bed with a full face of makeup.
Yes.
Like, coming face to face. What do you mean? Coming face to face with these fake severed heads. Oh my God. It's so camp that it kind of out-camps camp. Like, yeah.
Yeah, she also has an encounter with the farmhand, Leo Kraus, played by George Kennedy. And they have a very awkward exchange before he cuts off the head of a chicken with an axe, sending Lucy into hysterics. And it pretty much throughout the whole film, anytime she sees any kind of sharp object, which happens to be around a lot. I mean, she's on a farm, so she's going to see sharp objects more than the average person. Uh-huh. But every time she has one of those moments, those face cracks. And are you going to hear me say this a lot? But this is the first time I'm going to say it. Joan Crawford commits to this role. Absolutely commits. She doesn't do it by halves. She is giving a performance. She's taking this very seriously. She's like, that bitch, Bette Davis, she got nominated. Oh, I'm going to get nominated. This is my Hagsploitation Oscar nomination. Uh-huh. And admittedly, I probably would have, because it's a fantastic performance. Yeah. So Lucy finally meets Michael and gets rather too close to him for Carol's comfort. You didn't tell me he was that good looking.
She gets drunk and she is trying to steal a man.
Yeah, so this outfit brings some sort of side of her out that no one was expecting.
I feel like this was improvised. I don't even feel like this was written.
I feel like this is all Joan. She's on top form again. She's putting the moves on him. It's fantastic.
She puts her fingers in his mouth.
She does. This is how I presume Joan Crawford would flirt with a man.
It's very Samantha Jones.
It's very Samantha Jones. I can handle the socks.
Yeah. But this is the thing. I just said that, you know, the heads in bed scene outcamps camp. This outcamps that camp in that camp scene. Like, this is just... this has to be the campest moment in the film. Like, just her putting the moves on.
Yeah. And
And what it's followed by as well.
Yes.
Honestly, it's just... This is why I love camp cinema.
Because Dr. Anderson, her psychiatrist, he comes to visit Lucy. And the encounter proves too much for her and she experiences a breakdown. The doctor now questions the Institute's decision to release her into society. Now, fun fact.
Yeah.
Mitchell Cox, who plays Dr. Anderson, was not an actor.
Really?
I was surprised. It caught me off guard as well, this little fun fact. He was actually the vice president of public relations for the Pepsi-Cola company. Joan Crawford had given him the role without consulting producer and director William Castle.
We've already seen Pepsi by this point in the film.
We have already seen Pepsi.
Now we're seeing the second face of Pepsi.
The second face of Pepsi. He is definitely acting like the vice president of public relations for the Pepsi-Cola company.
He is dead.
Would act in a film.
Dead behind the eyes before he gets murdered. It's hilarious.
And the role is much bigger and heftier than it really has any right to be with him in the role.
Than it should have been.
Because he's got fucking dialogue as well. He's got some real dialogue. There's an iconic moment where Lucy puts on a jazz record to distract from the doctor's presence and then uses the record to strike her match. I'm pretty sure I've seen this online a few times as a sort of meme or a gif. And they talk about how 20 years is a long time and how Lucy can't turn back the clock. It's the way she feels rather than the way she looks that's important, despite Lucy's efforts to appear younger. Again, quintessential hagsploitation.
Yeah.
This woman being told that she can't turn back the clock no matter what. You are old.
You are in the chair.
Yeah.
You know, that shit.
But she says, when I look in the mirror, it doesn't look to me as though 20 years have passed. And I get it, Queen. I mean,
do you know why? Because it hasn't. Because this was probably filmed before the first scene. There was no effort whatsoever to make her appear at a different age, which is fine. She could get away with it. I couldn't, but she can. So there we go. The Doctor now questions the Institute's decision to release her, like I said, into society. And the Doctor tells Carol about how Lucy is trying to recapture the past with the clothes and the wig. He ultimately decides that it would be best for Lucy to return to the institution. But before he can put his plan into action, he is killed and then later found dismembered in the barn. Do you think this was an influence on Friday the 13th, part 3?
Probably.
Everyone who walks into that barn just ends up dead. Yeah.
This is a great death scene. Because it doesn't pull any punches.
No.
This is the one, isn't it, where you see the head?
No. Is it That's not? George Kennedy.
Oh, I thought it was
this one story. Doesn't either. This one actually probably does a little more.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, the one coming up. But the one
coming up, yeah.
Her breakdown as well is great when she storms out. It's like, who told you about my dreams? Who told you about my nightmares? No! Leave me alone! And he's just there, like, just standing there, dead behind the eyes. Bless him. No idea what to do.
It's so true. Lucy speaks to Carol about how the clothes and the wig are making her behave irrationally. She's decided to keep her hair grey and focus more on her knitting.
Just like society tells us.
It's what society would want from her, definitely. Both Carol and Lucy fear that Lucy was probably the one who chopped up the Doctor after his body's discovered during one of her traumatic flashbacks. Carol hides the Doctor's car, but is seen by Leo, who blackmails her. A short time later, Leo is decapitated in the barn. So a very small role for George Kennedy. But this is where we see an actual decapitation.
It's so good.
It's so good. I mean, we're not getting blood splatters. It is very, how would you describe it? Sort of, if you went to a visit to the London Dungeon,
yeah,
and they put on like a little hokey little show.
Yeah.
But it looks great. It's fantastic. And I was shocked. I mean, this was the first time I watched it. This was a 12.
Mm.
You know, I'd seen decapitations, but it was a silhouette against the wall. I was like, okay, you know, this isn't what the film's about. You know, it's from 1964. So we're not going to see an actual decapitation, which is fine. And then it's like, whoop, off of his head.
Yeah.
Like, iconic death scene. So, one evening, Lucy and Carol visit Michael and his parents for dinner, and it is not a happy affair. Lucy is reluctant to go, nervous she would embarrass herself again, because she's wearing the dress, she's wearing the bangles, she's wearing the wig.
She is.
She's also forced to wear them, and that always spells disaster. Mm-hmm. She's doing it for Carol. Kind of emotionally blackmails her into putting on this outfit again and all that business.
Please, so, Mama, slay for me, please.
In a fantastic scene, which shows a lot of sort of directing prowess from William Castle, who's a fantastic director, but people may not think he is the most stylish director. We have a scene where Lucy hallucinates, or she thinks she's hallucinating, or she believes that she's trapped in a glamorous cell.
Yes.
Because it's got stripy walls and a vanity table. Mm-hmm. And she thinks that she's back in like a padded room.
Yeah.
And we have this shot from above.
Yeah.
And Joan is, of course, putting on a performance for us. But I think it looks fantastic.
It does.
Like, really great shot. And it's revealed that there is a door there, and Carol opens the door, and she's only in this room, whatever this kind of room is. I don't really know. Would you call it like a powder room or something, or just a room where ladies powder their nose and get ready. But it turns out she's spilt coffee on her dress, and
Carol was getting the stains out. Mm-hmm. I thought this was fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
I thought this
was looks so
a
good.
Real bit of horror. I mean, yeah. Akin to something like Repulsion.
Yeah.
You know, really great. Michael's mother believes Carol is unfit to marry her precious boy and has no qualms in saying
she
so.
Does not.
She's, at least she's honest. In a rage, Lucy storms out of the house, pursued by Carol and Michael, leaving Michael's parents alone in their home. And again, Joan gives us a fucking performance.
She does.
An absolute performance. She basically says, my girl's going to get what she wants out of this life. I was cheated. She won't be.
Mm-hmm.
A real emotional performance by someone who has been, you know, screwed over in life.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And it's, I do enjoy how much she commands the screen during all these scenes. Like, all these big monologue moments in a B movie, B movie film about someone who's an exploitation film about an axe murderer. You know, it's there's no reason for her performance to be this good, but it is, and I'm living for it.
In the documentary that we watched, they seemed to be a confusion between what was B movie and A movie.
Mm.
So obviously, Joan Crawford, one of the biggest stars of all time, A movie. William Castle, the king of the B movie.
Uh-huh.
And so it's, and you get that with hag-sploitation because of these women who are forced into starring in B movies as they're aging. You get this sort of A-list status in a B-list movie. You know, whatever happened to Baby Jane was never meant to be the huge box office success that it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was seen very much as a B movie, and then it's getting Oscar nominations and all that business. So it's, for me, it incorporates so much that I love, like classic Hollywood and B movies, and brings them together. So it's one of my absolute favorite genres. Yes, a lot of it is based purely on misogyny, and we can look back now and point that out and say, well, no, you know, that's not right. But I can also say, but it's fucking entertaining, and we can look at it from that perspective. Uh-huh. So later, while in his closet, Michael's father is butchered. Michael's mum is subsequently confronted by the killer as she has a little search. She's making up a little bit of time when she's searching the bathroom and there's someone behind the shower curtain. Uh-huh. It may be a little reference to Robert Bloch's previous work.
There's a room. There is a room with a lot of taxidermy in it.
Yes.
In one scene as well. There's definitely a few psycho references thrown in.
Absolutely. So Michael's mum is subsequently confronted by the killer, who is wearing a latex mask that resembles Lucy's face.
Yeah. I was gagged the first time I watched this because you don't expect it. Now, watching it back, it's like, okay, little things here and there. It's kind of like, well, it does make sense. But you're sure you've seen Joan Crawford doing these murders?
Yes.
It's her outfit. It's her wig. You know, of course it's her. So when it happens, I was like, oh, fuck. I actually really did not see that coming the first time I watched it.
Yeah, yeah. I think it looks great.
It does. It's
I actually do think it looks great.
It's kind of horrifying. I mean, everything on there is accurate with the makeup and she's wearing the bangles.
Yes.
She's got the whole outfit on.
Because then Lucy herself enters for the big reveal, having returned to the house. Lucy then fights and subdues the killer.
The battle of the bangles. That's all you can hear.
Oh my God. Joan Crawford wrestling with herself. It's absolutely, what's that, is it the Spider-Man mean where they're pointing at each other they're fighting on the bed and she removes the mask and it's revealed to be Carol. Carol was the murderer. She was dressing up like her mother and killing these people and making poor Lucy, although we must remember that Lucy did actually murder people. Like, yes, she was cheated on. I do understand
that. I say get it, girl.
But
go for it. We're talking films here, so it doesn't have to be realistic, and I am fully rooting for her. I think Lee Majors
never to cheat at all.
Lee Majors deserved it. The little bitch he was cheating with deserved it.
He might not have known that she was. She might have known. Might not have known that he was married.
Yeah, just ignore the kid on your way in.
That is a bit. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That is. Yeah. Let's not get into that.
She admits to the killings having been motivated by greed. Carol had hoped to murder Michael's parents and frame Lucy, enabling her to marry Michael and get his riches, I assume. Yeah. She has a breakdown. She says, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you. No, I didn't mean that. I love you, I hate you. I love it.
The scene where you're only supposed to see her, or so she thought.
This is Diane Baker. She knew that this was her moment. She was revealed to be the killer. She's having her emotional breakdown. This is the end of the film. Everything's come to a conclusion. Also, Diane Baker thought. Because what we also get is Lucy outside having her own breakdown.
What's hugging a pillar?
Hugging a pillar. Joan Crawford again putting on a performance, putting on a show. Diane Baker noted in the making of the documentary that this breakdown outside the door wasn't in the original script, but unsurprisingly, let's be fair,
neither was the finale.
No. Joan Crawford didn't want the drama to end under Baker's face.
No, she didn't.
She's her film. She's on the poster. People are going to see a Joan Crawford picture.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why we get an additional scene after that as well.
We also do, because in the film's final scene, the now magically sane Lucy... I love how adding the trauma on top of everything else, like the trauma of her daughter pretending to be her and murdering people, like, if anything, that might be somewhat more traumatic than the original murder.
Yes. Yeah.
It's like... But anyway, apparently that cured her, you know, two wrongs apparently do make a right. And she's preparing to visit Carol in the same psychiatric hospital where she was once confined. It's very Psycho-esque. It's very much the little roundup at the end with the psychology. Yeah.
It's also painful how much she's desperately trying to end the film on her being the protagonist.
Yes.
Like, I can help her now. And we get the big classic Hollywood score, like we're watching our hero.
apparently Carol set up the whole thing, absolutely everything. The heads in the bed were set up.
Yeah.
The sound of the children singing about her was also set up. The photo album was set up completely by Carol. It was all her from start to finish. Yeah.
And we end the film on the Columbia Pictures symbol, the lady with the torch, without her head.
Yes.
Down at her feet.
I love it. I love it. It's pure William Castle. What a great way to end the film. Definitely.
It's iconic.
And that's Straitjacket. It is.
The height of camp.
William Castle does this perfectly.
Yeah.
It's perfect B movie.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason we're watching this is Joan Crawford.
Yeah.
That performance is up there with some of the best. Because she fully commits. And when everything else is so fucking ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And so over the top B movie. And Joan Crawford thinks she's still in fucking Mildred Pierce.
Uh-huh.
It's all perfection.
It is. It's amazing. One of my favourite William Castle films. It's definitely up there in his top five.
Definitely. I highly recommend. If you believe you have similar taste to us after listening, I hope you've already watched it because we've just spoiled the whole fucking thing.
Yeah.
But if you haven't, I really highly recommend watching it. It's pretty much how I would describe my taste in films. Definitely.
Should we give it some awards?
Yes. Biggest Queen.
It's got to be Lucy.
It's Lucy. Definitely. Yeah, lead singer of the Bangles.
Yeah.
Old Lucy. Good old Lucy. She's having a manic Monday.
She is. She is. Biggest gasp, I give it to the big reveal with Carol in the Joan mask.
I went with an actual decapitation in a 12.
Yeah.
Yeah, George Kennedy's head going flying was quite a shocker.
Best dialogue, I am very much a woman and very much aware of the fact.
Absolutely.
No doubt. That is definitely the best dialogue.
And that's camp. There's a lot of choices, but I give it to Lucy getting drunk and trying to seduce her daughter's boyfriend.
So many to choose from, like Gary said, but I went with the two Jones at the end. An all-time classic, fighting each other.
Yeah, camp heaven. Ratings, I give it 10 Jacqueline Wilson bracelets out of 10.
I give it 10 cases of over-accessorizing out of 10.
And masterpiece, trash piece, trash, basic, or a camp old bunch of fun. For the second week in a row, it's a camp old bunch of masterpiece.
It's a camp old bunch of masterpiece.
It's available on Blu-ray and video on demand. And if you enjoyed this, I've got two recommendations I think you should check out. Pearl, obviously, and Nightmares in a Damaged Brain.
Yes, great choices there. I went with 3. If you enjoyed this, check out Hush Hush Sweet Charlotte, Psycho 2, and Homicidal.
Yeah.
3 fan fucking tastic films. Mm-hmm. 5 fantastic films, yeah, to recommend there.
And we are Horror Cult Trash over on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. Horror Cult Trash on Twitter. I'm Dead at Gaz92 on Letterboxd, Gazmo205 on Instagram, and GazCruise92 on Twitter.
I'm Chris Barker 823 on Instagram and Letterboxd.
And we are also GazPorrorFest across all social media as well. We are getting even closer now. It is next month. Go and get your tickets. Give us a rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, like and follow on everything else. Next week, Hagsploitation continues with a bit of modern Hagsploitation, when we'll be discussing X.
X. Yes.
Discussing Maxine herself before Maxine was released.
Yeah.
So we're back. Very same exciting. Time, same place next week.
Bye.